True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, please gamble responsibly.
Rise and shine, people. We have so much to talk about on a Monday, September 15th, here on the show. We'll start with the chaos that was college football over the weekend, ranking the biggest upsets and which ones mattered the most. At 7:20, we go on to our best bets for the Monday Night Football doubleheader. I got a ton of prop bets that I'm going to throw your way. Then at 7:40, it's Overreaction Monday. We're going to hear some wild narratives coming out of week two in the NFL, which takes are warranted and which ones should be stiff-armed. It's all next on the Daily Tip presented by BetMGM. All right, Jenks. So I know that you were busy locked into the Texas and UTEP game, but we had some massive games in college football over the weekend. And I understand that maybe you're a little sad about Arch Manning and some of the throws that he did not make. But some of these other fans, you know, had a tough weekend as well, where as much as we love, like, the thrilling finishes, there is also a loser attached to those games as well. So let's start with, like, the two major upsets. So Georgia Tech beat number 12 Clemson 24-21, and then we had Texas A&M going on the road and upsetting Notre Dame 41-40. So let me ask you this. Of these two teams that lost over the weekend, which one is in the worst position now? Like, if you're looking at Notre Dame, who is 0-2 for the first time since 2022, and obviously they just played in the national championship last year, even though they lost, still a disappointing start, to say the least. Then you look at Clemson, now 1-2, a team that a lot of people like to win the national championship this year. A lot of people like Cade Klubnik, including me, to win the Heisman. Only win this year has been over Troy. So which of these teams are you still willing to have some faith in?
I mean, maybe Notre Dame, I guess, just because they've had they played some very good teams, right? You know, you lose to Miami, you lose to Texas A&M at, you know, at the buzzer, essentially, or as time is running out. And there was a penalty on that play that was not called. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I think Clemson is the one that I believe in the least, just because what have they done? They lost to LSU. They lost to Georgia Tech. And when you lose to, they look bad against Troy, had to come back from like 16 down in that game. So when you lose on the road, I know it's unranked team, you know, and you've struggled already relative to their expectations. I think that's what gets to me, right? Because weren't we all talking about Clemson as being maybe not a dark horse, but certainly one of the favorites to win a national title? This is Klubnik coming back. Great, you know, on both lines, particularly on the defensive line. Dabo finally using the portal. And so there was so much Clemson talk before the season, and now it just looks like a team that isn't nearly what we thought it was going to be.
I think it's more upsetting for Clemson because they look like the team that was ready to go from the start just because they had so much experience. Like, this is a team that you looked at in the preseason. You said, okay, Cade Klubnik's been there a while. He has plenty of experience. This should be a good team from the jump. Meanwhile, you look at Notre Dame, and they lost some big pieces. Hell, they didn't even name C.J. Carr the starter until, what, a week before the season started? So I think we looked at this team, we knew that maybe it wasn't going to be the fastest start. And also the fact that they lost these games by a combined, what, 4 points? You know, they lost to Texas A&M 41-40, lost to Miami 27-24. And I will say this for both teams. I think in college football, if you're going to lose games, do it at the first of the year. Because we've seen this every year. When the college football committee, you know, if they want a team in, it's very easy to look at the start of the season and be like, oh, well, that was months ago. This team's way better now. And here's the thing with Notre Dame is that I feel like they will get the gentle nudge from the committee, you know, if it's neck and neck between Notre Dame and another team that also has to play in a conference championship game, which Notre Dame does not. But on the flip side for Clemson, they are only 0-1 in conference play. Like, the ACC is far from being decided. So, I mean, there's still plenty of time for Clemson to rebound and still possibly win the ACC. Because if they win the ACC championship, you know, they're in. So, I don't think the season is over for either of these teams. Because, again, the college football playoff committee can spin things a lot of ways. And it is still September.
Oh, well, yes, absolutely. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? You know, Notre Dame being ranked still at 0-2 is sort of crazy. It's the first time that's happened since 1988. But also, they don't really play anyone else. So if they run through the rest of their season, I'm like you. I feel like they'll give the Irish the benefit. Like, they'll go on this run now because they're good enough to do it. And C.J. Carr will continue to improve. And then they'll run off all these wins. If they're already in the top 25, they'll continue to be ranked. And then by the end of the season, it'll be like, yeah, you know, they've won a lot of games. They had a couple tough losses to ranked teams. And then maybe they slide their way in. So I think they're probably going to be that team. If you're looking at maybe someone like Clemson or something, that is probably has the better chance to slide in at the end of the season.
I think at this point, like, how much do the rankings matter to you? Because I think the veneer has been cast aside at this point. When you have some of these stories coming out where, you know, the voters don't care about the ratings. And also, like, you see some of these teams that are in the top 25 and you're like, what? What are we doing with this ranking? And, like, especially these teams that don't have the pedigree. Like, I feel like if Alabama did what Vanderbilt has done this year, or even Georgia Tech, you know, they would be ranked much higher, but it's because, you know, it's Georgia Tech, it's Vanderbilt. They don't get the slight, you know, oh, well, this is a good team because we have innate trust in them.
Right. No, very true. I'm trying to look at this slate and figure out who I trust, but I'll tell you one thing. When you mention Vanderbilt, like, Vanderbilt is no joke. Like, they're going to be a real problem.
Right.
I was looking at the SEC schedule for Texas before the year, and I was like, okay, Vandy, that's probably when. I'm like, I don't know now. Like, Pavia is just like, you could run him over with a steamroller, and he'll get up and be like, all right, let's go. Like, he's unbelievable. They're so well coached. And the fact that they just absolutely destroyed a really good South Carolina team that I was pretty high on before the season tells you a lot. Like, Vandy is going to be a tough out for everyone.
I think they're going to be maybe the South Carolina of this year. Where, remember, South Carolina looked tough last year. And what, they finished like 9-3 and they still didn't get in? Like, that's the difficult part for some of these teams that don't have the pedigree. Because it just feels like it's assumed that they don't belong in unless they prove it. Especially in the SEC, where they're already going to have several teams that are vying for these bids. So I think that's the challenging part for Vanderbilt, is that they're going to have to be so good that people can't ignore them.
Yeah, and I think they might just do it. Like, they might just end up forcing people to pay attention. Especially, look, if you play in a, you know, a Power Four conference and you keep winning ball games, even if you're not a blue blood or even if you're not a name, if you will, eventually people will have to start paying attention. Voters will pay attention. And then there'll be one of those teams where in a few weeks we're talking about, is this the surprise team in college football this year? Especially the SEC.
Yeah. So what's the thermometer read on South Carolina now? Because this was a team that I was kind of high on to start the season. But it's interesting because we had a bunch of, like, national college football writers on the show. And several of them had their concerns about South Carolina. Not necessarily Lenora Sellers, but the pieces around him. So when they come off a loss of 31-7 to Vanderbilt, and I'm not saying that with sarcasm, like, to Vanderbilt. No, we just said Vanderbilt's a good team. But Do you believe in South Carolina now? Like, again, I think they're one of those teams that almost had to be perfect to, like, get the attention and the respect of people. Now you already have a loss on the season. Is it over for South Carolina September?
I mean, it's not over. I mean, I think two things here.
Right.
Whenever you play in a conference this good, I mean, arguably the best conference in the country, then all you got to do is win. Like, all you have to do is win.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, if you're not in one of those Power Four conferences, just winning sometimes isn't enough. You can't afford a single loss. But now, as we see the playoffs slowly getting expanded now, it's going to continue to expand, whatever. But which is what the SEC wants, right? Which is why they're one of the ones trying to push for a larger playoff, because they don't want their teams to be punished for losing a game or two during conference play, and they want as many teams as possible to make the playoff. We're not there yet where it's completely expanded, but certainly if you're South Carolina, if you win games, I think they'll be just fine. But also, I think this Vanderbilt loss is going to look better at the end of the season. Like, right now, you're like, oh my God, they lost to Vanderbilt. I think the Commodores are the real deal and a team that people should be paying attention to. So I think they're going to get better as the season goes on, and you'll look back and say, oh, that loss wasn't so bad. Just like you can look back and say, oh, that win wasn't as great as we thought it was at the time. You can also look back and say, that wasn't nearly the loss that we thought it was. And I think that's going to be the case for the Gamecocks.
Well, remember when Alabama lost to Vanderbilt? And, like, still people were, like, making a case for them. So, like, it's wild the, like, mental gymnastics that people do depending on the team that you are arguing for. But I will say this. Like, I think that South Carolina, they have enough marquee games still left on the schedule that they can certainly prove themselves. You know, you look at the schedule, and any SEC schedule is tough, but they go on the road to LSU, who is up to number 3 in the polls, I believe. Maybe that Alabama game is not going to be as much of a statement win if they win it at home. We'll see if Alabama turns some people's opinions, because obviously they look good over the weekend. Then they have a game against Oklahoma, who's looked really good. Ole Miss, who's in the top 15. Texas A&M, that is a road game, and Texas A&M just knocked off number 8 Notre Dame. And then you end the season against Clemson. So I feel like that game at the end of the year can always prove something, because Clemson is usually in, you know, the conversation as well. So if South Carolina does win out, they have plenty of chances to win big statement games.
Oh, yeah, and that's which is exactly the point, right? Like, you can't you can't let a loss like this, like, derail your season, especially in conference, because it's just too competitive. I think that's one of the reasons why we saw Brian Kelly get – it's the one thing he didn't say, but I think it was sort of implied. He's like, dude, we just won an SEC game against look, say what you want to about Florida. We just won an SEC game. Do you know how hard it is to win in this conference? I'm not worried about third downs right now. Like, we just won a game in conference. I mean, look at Clemson or any other conference. It's just tough to win conference play. You know, I know we have kind of a top-heavy set of teams in college football, but we still see a lot of parity as well. And so, you know, if you're a South Carolina, or if you I don't want to say Clemson. I'm really down on Clemson, but I certainly don't think it's over for the Gamecocks based on their schedule. It's, if you're the head coach, if you're Shane Beamer, you just say, look, guys, this is a tough loss for us, but if we keep winning, we're going to be just fine.
Speaking of tough losses, I feel like not many stung as bad as Tennessee's loss over the weekend. So Tennessee was in an absolute barn burner with Georgia over the weekend, and at the first, things were looking great for the Vols. They jumped out to an early lead. The scripted plays that Josh Heupel laid out in the first quarter looked amazing. But then the wheels fell off for the Vols. I was watching this game at a wedding. We all had our phones pulled up, and we were watching this. And most people turn off. They're like, oh, there's no way that Tennessee loses this game, right? But then they have a field goal to win it. They miss the field goal. It goes to overtime, and Georgia takes care of business in overtime. 44-41, final score. Tennessee does cover the 3.5, I will say that. But Jenks, let me ask you, was this a bigger win for Georgia or more of a Tennessee lost this game type of situation?
Oh, man. God, that's a tough one. I feel like Tennessee had this bad boy. You know, I feel like this is going to be more devastating for them because it was right there. Mm. I mean, it was just early on, man. It looked like it might be a blowout. And then I kind of pumped the brakes, because I was like, hey, it's still Georgia. Let's not act like Georgia's going to get run here. But it kind of looked that way with the way that offense was humming for Tennessee. But I think to, you know, have a lead like that and to let Georgia kind of hang around and hang around. And then that fourth down play where Gunnar Stockton found Lennon Humphreys on that fade, and that just felt like, oh my, like for that to come home, and then the two-point conversion, then that just shifted the entire momentum of that game. And so you can't let a team like Georgia hang around and get conservative. You have to play the way that you start the game. I understand you have to be smart with clock management and things like that, but if you get away from what made you successful in the first place, then you sort of lose your identity a little bit and allows other teams, especially great teams like the Dogs, you know, hang around and then pull off the win.
Yeah, Kirby Smart's great at making adjustments. And I think maybe this is the knock on Josh Heupel, is that he is an offensive mind and he's very good at drawing up a game plan and scripting a drive, you know, to start the game. Like, this is why betting on Tennessee in the first quarter has been a really profitable bet over the last few years. But I think if there is a silver lining in this game for Tennessee, is that Joey Aguilar looked really good in this game. Maybe the stats don't pop off the page as much as you'd like. 24 of 36, 371 yards, 4 touchdowns, 2 picks. But he does feel like an upgrade over Nico. Like, this was a big game for him because we had only seen him against, you know, lesser competition. But this was good defense. He looked good.
Oh, my God. And I didn't know, because coming into this game, like, he had, I don't want to say padded his stats, but they hadn't played anybody. But for him to do this against Georgia proves, like, this guy's no joke. He can play.
Right. So Tennessee certainly has the manpower. We'll see if they can finish out games in the rest of the season. Coming up next, a double dip on Monday night. Our plays for Bucks Texans and Chargers Raiders after the break.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab 3 of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. It's a Monday, which normally Mondays suck, but during football season, they suck a lot less because we get Monday Night Football, and even better, we get two games tonight, Jinx. We have the Chargers and the Raiders, and we have the early game, which is the Bucks and the Texans. So over the weekend, I don't know if you noticed like the theme that was going on, but it felt like we had so much offense over the weekend. And I just looked. Overs went 10-4 in week 2, and most of the under games came in prime time. Like, one of those was like the Eagles and Chiefs. The other one was the Commanders game, which was on a Thursday. So, like, I'm looking at these games, I'm like, okay, which theme do I believe? Do I believe, like, the primetime theme where, you know, we've seen the trend of primetime unders kind of be a thing? Or do I believe, you know, some of these stats that jump off the page? Because it wasn't just the totals. It was, you know, guys putting up premier days in fantasy. We had 12 receivers with at least 100 yards receiving. Russell Wilson had 450 yards through the air. It was just one of those days that even if you didn't have, like, a bunch of sides, if you had props, you made some good money over the weekend if you had some overs.
I know. I wish I were a big props person because I'm not. I'll bet a prop, you know, from time to time. It's not generally my bag, but I noticed that as well. Man, we're seeing a lot of scoring, like a ton.
Yeah.
And I know that I would check in on my fantasy teams. I know nobody wants to hear about my individual fantasy teams, but it was amazing how quickly, like on both sides, everyone's score or total was changing so rapidly because of all that scoring. Like you'd look 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, and you know, a score is completely flip-flop because it was just one touchdown after the other.
Right. Like here I thought that like Ravens Bills was like in a glass case where it's like, oh, nobody can touch this game. Then I'm watching Giants Cowboys and I'm like, oh my God, this is the awesome. Most entertaining game. Like I almost thought to myself, I'm like, don't cut away to the Eagles and Chiefs just yet. I want to see the end to this game. So I don't know if it's the defenses. I don't know what it is. And also these kickers keep hitting like 64-yard field goals. Did you see that? Like, I understand the balls are different, but like kickers this year, man, oh, these kicks, and they're going like 70 yards. Like they are not just barely clearing, you know, the goalposts. Some of these look like they go for 70. I wonder if we'll see a 70 yarder this year.
We might. I mean, Brandon Aubrey's kick, that would have been good from 70. There's no question. Like, absolutely. It wasn't close. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I don't know what's going on, but we were talking about this before the season, which is at some point, Justin Tucker's record, which I believe is 66. Like, you can see other kickers, like, kind of hovering around that number. Someone's going to break that bad boy. It's only a matter of time. You can see it.
Yeah. I wonder if the Cowboys play on the road at the Broncos. Like, probably not. Like, because I know, obviously, that's an AFC team. But, like, think about all these long kicks we've seen and then add altitude to it. Because, like, some of these guys with massive legs, then the ball flies higher in altitude, or longer, I should say.
Yeah.
So I think it could happen. And some of these coaches, they've seen it. They're like, yeah, we're going to go for a field goal. And you're like, what? A 64-yarder? And then he makes it. So I can't blame him. Can't blame him when the guys keep making these field goals. All right, Jenks, let's get into Monday Night Football because we have a couple of good ones on tap, or at least that's what the odds makers are thinking. Tight lines in both of these games. We start off with the Bucs at the Texans. Houston laying 2.5. Total of 42.5 here. If you're interested in money line prices, Houston -145. Tampa Bay +120. So, Jenks, this appears to be a good game on paper. Two pretty solid quarterbacks, two great defenses. The Bucs have been very good at stopping the run. Meanwhile, the Texans have a ferocious defensive line, and also Derek Stingley Jr. on the secondary as well. So you see this total at 42.5. I think that's a little too low for my liking because we can see a low-scoring game happen. You can still score 43 points. But what about a side here? Do you have a strong feeling on this game?
I think I like the Bucs in this game, honestly. Like, I'm going to grab the 2.5 with Tampa. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to play it officially for our show, but I wonder if the Texans' offense can keep up with the Bucs. Like, the fact that the Bucs added Emeka Egbuka to their lineup is remarkable because they were already high power with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. I know Godwin isn't back yet, but he's slated to come back in maybe the next week or two. I mean, the Texans looked really bad last week. I think the Texans miss Joe Mixon in a big way.
Yeah.
Because last year, they started off where they didn't really have an offensive identity. By the end of the year, they were more of a run-first team and didn't put so much of the burden on C.J. Stroud. And so, look, last week, the Texans didn't score a single touchdown against the Rams. So I need to see a little bit more offensively from them. And if they don't have Mixon, do they have the horses to keep up with Tampa Bay? Because when the Bucs get going on offense, they're really good. So I think I'm going to be on Tampa.
I think the question for me is that is what we're seeing from the Texans offense rust? Because obviously it was the first game of the season, and they do have some injuries, like Tank Dell is still out as well. Or is it, you know, a larger problem where the offensive line has not been good at protecting C.J. Stroud? Because we saw this last year. C.J. Stroud, I think, was sacked the second most of any quarterback in the NFL. So the offensive line needs a little bit of work, and not great when you're going against a defensive-minded team, which their offense is good too. But when you think of Todd Bowles, like, that's a defensive coach for the Bucs, and they're going to present a bunch of different looks, and it's going to be difficult for C.J. Stroud to get things going. So I think for me, I would lean towards the Bucs. I wish we were getting 3, but we're only getting 2.5. But I feel like this game is a coin flip to me, and if you're giving me, you know, 2.5 points on one side of the coin, I'm going to take the points. I do think this is a game that may be good for props because we only have one game of sample size. But we did see something in the first game of the season for the Texans is that they are not good at defending slot receivers. Maybe it's a Puka Nacua thing, because I understand he is very, very good and he has an elite quarterback and Matt Stafford throwing him the ball. But he torched the Texans for 130 yards on 10 catches. So if you're looking at the Bucs, you say, okay, who's the slot receiver? Amika Buka. When you read the articles about him, it feels like you are reading an article on Puka Nacua. It's like a lot of the same adjectives, where it's a route running technician, somebody who, you know, is very good at the footwork, at reading defenses, at the technical part of his job. So if you're looking at this Texans defense, you say, okay, you know, Puka Nacua torched him. Maybe you bet on Amika Buka, who obviously has a wider window now that we have Chris Godwin out, who's also their slot receiver. Jalen McMillan is still out. So I think the opportunity is going to be there. 53.5 is the number for him. I think I'm going to hit the over on Amika Buka over his receiving prop.
Oh, I like that. I mean, he was so good last year at Ohio State, but he kind of got overshadowed by Jeremiah Smith. So the Bucs got such a steal in him. You know, if I did go one prop at this game, I think I would go Mike Evans anytime touchdown at plus 150. Because last week, Egbuka had two, right? Like, he immediately made a name for himself and said, I'm here, I'm a part of this offense. But I think because of that, look, you're not going to keep Mike Evans out of the end zone for long. Like, he didn't score last week. But now, because Egbuka has immediately announced his arrival, then you're not going to be able to focus all of your resources in the secondary on Mike Evans, or Egbuka is going to get loose. So I think because of that, it's going to give Mike Evans more of an opportunity or two, and you can get it at plus 150. So I might put a sprinkle on that.
Well, I think just bottom line is Mike Evans is really good in the red zone because he's a big guy. He's a veteran. And obviously the security... Right, and the security blanket is there for Baker Mayfield. Like, we know they have an established connection. And plus, at that price, like, I think it's difficult for me to want to put my money on an anytime touchdown bet when a total is 42.5. Like, obviously, odds makers are not expecting many touchdowns in this game. But that's a good price on Mike Evans. I'll say this. I think the rushing props for both quarterbacks are in play here. Because you look at both of these defenses, and I think that when you have those punishing defensive lines, and especially the Texans' offensive line that's not great at protecting C.J. Stroud, I think that's a good play. And plus, we've seen it with both of these guys as far as running the football. First game of the season, C.J. Stroud ran it 5 times for 32 yards. And plus, for some of these quarterback rushing props, they're not very high. Like, we know Baker Mayfield as well as somebody who is a gamer. Like, I'll say this that goes into the Texans handicap as well, is that when you have a team that's kind of desperate, like, I'm not going to say, like, if you're 0-1 to start the season, you're desperate. But, like, the Texans are at home here. So I think that when you have a team that is kind of feeling like they're a little on the ropes, C.J. Stroud is going to do everything he can to get that extra yard or two to pick up a first down. So I like those quarterback rushing props. It's 10.5, his rushing prop. 10.5 yards, juice the over at minus 115. If you look at Baker Mayfield, it's 17.5, which is a touch higher, but he had 39 his first game. I feel like Baker's due to break one off, especially when it's a primetime game.
Yeah. I mean, the guy has – he's one of those guys that when you think of – which – it's interesting, too, when you look at different markets. Like, he's a name, but he's not really known for his legs. You know what I mean? Like, you think of Lamar Jackson or someone like that, or Josh Allen, someone who can run. You don't think of Baker, but Baker can move. And so it's always built into the number. Vegas is too smart for that. But I guess the point is, when you think of Baker, you think about him slinging it around, and you tend to – it's kind of like Patrick Mahomes, where it's a big name, but he's sneaky good on the ground if he gets loose. And so I kind of like plays like that, because you're I don't know if you're getting value, but because they don't fit into the traditional box of a rushing quarterback, sometimes you can get a good number.
I mean, the numbers are a lot lower, like 17 and a half for Baker Mayfield. To put that in perspective, what you normally get for Lamar Jackson is in the 50s. Same for Justin Fields. You know, his rushing prop is always sky high, so like, if you want to bet on him, great, but you know, he's going to have a massive game on the ground. So I think both those guys kind of take off as far as, you know, props go. Let's switch to the other game, Chargers and Raiders. This is a really interesting one because I think it will prove the narrative that I think that is already written in my head, that the Chargers are a really good team. So the Chargers laying 3.5 on the road here. This is a divisional game. total of 46.5. Now, historically, the Chargers have been very good at beating the Raiders, but this feels like a very different Raiders team. Obviously, Pete Carroll now at the helm. Geno Smith slung it around the first game of the season. Ashton Jeanty is a new weapon on the run game, even though he wasn't particularly effective in the first game. But Jenks, do you think this is a good spot for the Chargers? Do they continue to look, you know, maybe like one of the better teams in the AFC?
I think so. I think I might play this game. Now, I might buy the hook here and play it at 3. I'd feel more comfortable with that in a division game, especially with the Chargers going on the road. But I'll tell you this, man. I was going back and what am I saying? Hey, man, let me tell you about this, man. But, you know, before the season, the Broncos and Chargers had the exact same win total. And it was which one of these teams is going to be better than the other. And I didn't quite have an answer. I thought it might be the Broncos. And I think I was wrong about that. I think it's the Chargers. Like, I know it's one game. Again, we'll see these narratives change like that throughout the season, just like we saw with J.J. McCarthy last night. But now that the Chargers have another year with Jim Harbaugh, and now that they have some extra rest, like, I don't know about you, but when it comes to having extra time to get ready for a game, particularly in the NFL, I felt like that's something you should always build into your handicap. This is a Raiders secondary that is mediocre at best. And now that Jim Harbaugh has shown, yeah, I'm going to run the ball, but also I'm going to take advantage of this franchise quarterback and I'm going to have him sling it around. I'm not quite sold on the Raiders just yet. I'm glad the professionals are back in charge because Geno's great and Pete Carroll's a hell of a head coach. But I feel like if you can get 3 with the Chargers, it's the way to go.
Yeah, I think that's the key matchup for me is this Raiders secondary against Justin Herbert, who's looked unstoppable. And like the Chiefs, I understand people have thought that they've fallen from the mountaintop, but it's still a decent defense. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the Raiders, who gave up 287 yards to Drake May. And they gave up some big numbers to opposing receivers. Kayshon Butte had 103 yards against them. So I think even if maybe you don't want to play a side in this game, I think this will be a good game for props. I'm looking at Keenan Allen. His number's 53.5. Obviously, he is back with the Chargers after going to Chicago for a bit. But clearly, there is a rapport with him and Justin Herbert. He had a big game last week. 7 catches, 10 targets, 68 yards and a touchdown. So that's what I'm always looking for when it comes to props. Where are the targets? How many opportunities is he getting? Because I'm not looking for guys who had 2 targets and had 1 big catch, because obviously that doesn't feel repeatable. But Keenan Allen, like, maybe the sabotage factor is that for once it feels like the Chargers do have some depth at receiver. And Keenan Allen's not even their number one guy. That's Ladd McConkey. But from a betting standpoint, is that Ladd McConkey, your numbers on him are going to be in the 70s. So you get a lower number on Keenan Allen, and I feel like you have a higher ceiling. So I will be looking at that one. But from a game standpoint, it does feel like Justin Herbert is going to have, you know, a time against this Raiders secondary that we saw gave up some yards. And just on the other side of things, I keep forgetting that statistically speaking, the Chargers had the number one defense in the NFL last year. Like, I keep forgetting that. Like, I remember the games being really low scoring, but I just, for some reason, I thought it was, I don't know, somebody else. But the Chargers had a great defense last year, and it appears to be that way again, you know, at least in one game sample size against the Chiefs.
I mean, they're more of a complete team than I realized. And also, you know, not to take anything away from Pete Carroll, who is fantastic in his own right, but Jim Harbaugh is such a good head coach. And in a game like this where it's a bit of a tight line, then I tend to lean with who I think is the better head coach anyway. The Chargers just look like they're coached up and ready to have a hell of a season.
Yeah, and from an injury standpoint, Brock Bowers is questionable for this game. For the Raiders, a big part of their offense. Coming up next, time to take a walk down Narrative Street, the biggest overreactions to Week 2 in the NFL. Come your way next.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like watermelon, wild berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab 3 of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The day after a week in the NFL, we have all kinds of narratives. They're just flying all over the place, and we know how it is in the NFL. You know, reactions are big, and usually they are overreactions. But we are humans, and we have emotions. And sometimes I find myself having reactions where, like, I know they're stupid, but you have them anyway. Because, like, at the end of the day, like, it's entertainment. These are humans. Like, you're allowed to feel things. But, Jenks, you tell me if this is fair or foul. So I'm watching the Chiefs game, and this is when Travis Kelce had a big catch. And I think he might have stiff-armed a guy as well. So he had this celebration where I think he looked like he was, like, juggling his... I don't know if I can say it on the radio, so I'm not gonna, but like it was a celebration. And I thought to myself, oh, that's a bad look. Like, you already have Taylor Swift, you already have all these Super Bowls. You don't need to rub it in. I feel like guys like that who are at the pinnacle, like sometimes the celebrating, like it feels like too much. And I think people feel this way about Patrick Mahomes. Like, when he makes a big play and he celebrates, you're like, all right, we get it, you're amazing. Do you feel this way about Travis Kelce?
No, I don't, actually. I just feel like that it's fatigue more than anything else. You know, you see him everywhere, and whether it's on the football field, off the field, in commercials with Taylor, whatever it is, you see him in Happy Gilmore, he's acting more. So I feel like when you see someone everywhere and then you see them celebrate, it just kind of adds to the fatigue. So it doesn't bother me. I'm kind of accustomed to it by now, but I tried to accept my Chiefs fatigue because I just get exhausted with the constant Kansas City narrative, which I think we're starting to see break up now. So maybe that's what's helping me, but it didn't really bother me.
To be clear, I'm not saying I dislike him as a person. I am just saying, like, in the moment when he does these celebrations, I'm like, all right, we get it. Where it's almost to the point where we like gracious winners. You know, there is sportsmanship to both sides of the coin. You can be, you know, a good loser and like a gracious winner, and it just felt like one of those moments. And plus, like, they weren't even winning the game. Like, I think I still have PTSD from like Cam Newton doing celebrations down like 21 points where you're like, all right, we need to win the game, so like, can we not? So celebrations are a funny thing, and I understand no one gets more worked up than like Roger Goodell. He's like, oh, was that a look? Was that a hip thrust? Oh no, that's a penalty, call it in,
right?
Throw the flag.
Yeah, they, well, you know, the NFL, they're going to cut down on all these things, but they are, but they're not. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all arbitrary. So at some point, how do you define what is crossing a line? What's a normal celebration? This is a game, by the way. So you should be able to celebrate, but then when does it cross a line? Like, we'll never see anything that's really uniform when it comes to trying to penalize that or police that.
Yeah, it's the wheel of punishment. Wheel of punishment. Are you going to get a flag? I don't know. Like, who's the quarterback? Oh, is that going to be roughing the passer? Was that Patrick Mahomes? How dare you? So it's funny how that works. All right. So one of the many narratives over the weekend that was on the table was Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. So we're going to take a walk down narrative street. So what we're going to do is Denton's going to come in and he's going to give us a player or a team. And we say what the given narrative should be, maybe what it is, and maybe what the truth is in between when it comes to some of these players and teams. All right, Denton, so let's start us off here.
Yes, I think word association, but this is going to be narrative association. So since you guys started with the Kansas City Chiefs, I will start with the Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
I feel like the narrative is that the Chiefs are cooked. Like, that's probably the term that a lot of people are using because they're 0-2 for the first time, and it feels like forever for a team that used to be sitting on top of the mountain, they now look very vulnerable because we know how difficult it is for NFL teams to start off slow and still make the postseason. But I feel like that narrative is a little premature. I feel like the Chiefs are still playing in close games, and this is exactly what we saw last year. And what did they do last year? They played in the Super Bowl. Granted, they lost in the Super Bowl, but they are still a top-end team with top-end talent that has reinforcements that will be coming halfway through the season where they have more depth at receiver. So I am far from counting out the Chiefs. I feel like that narrative is fiction.
I think they're just no longer elite is what I think. I think they're a really good football team. You're always going to be really good when you have Patrick Mahomes, and that's it. But just like in the past where we saw, you know, the Bills, we've seen it now. The Bills just can't get past the Chiefs. They can't get past the Chiefs. Maybe this will be the year. Now the Chiefs have a real problem, and that problem is the Eagles. So even if they win the AFC, they're going to run right back into Philly, which has now won three straight against them. Patrick Mahomes now has the first three-game losing streak in his pro career. Also, Travis Kelce is going to be gone after this year. Travis Kelce continues to, you know, be Patrick Mahomes' number one target. And yeah, the Chiefs are going to get more reinforcements at receiver, but not having that security blanket, I think long term is going to affect the Chiefs. So now they're just simply a good team, a really good team, but they're no longer elite. And I think we're starting to see that play out in real time.
All right, what's next up?
Next on our list of narratives, how about JJ McCarthy and the Minnesota Vikings?
Jenks, you want to go first since I went first last?
Yeah, I'd say just let's pump the brakes on J.J. McCarthy. Like, what I would say is we don't know anything about J.J. McCarthy. Like, people are so quick. They want to, like, even now, like, I understand we need a narrative. How do we feel about J.J. McCarthy? I don't know. Like, I don't know. He looks like a rookie quarterback to me. He is a rookie quarterback. So he looked great in week one. Last night, I mean, my God, the Falcons were knocking him around everywhere. Six sacks by the Falcons. I think the narrative is he's still a rookie and he's probably going to be okay. But we don't really know anything about J.J. McCarthy. We've had a whole year to act like we know anything about J.J. McCarthy and how he's going to be and how good the Vikings are going to be. At the end of the day, we don't know anything until you step on the field and you start doing it for real. So J.J. McCarthy, still a rookie. He's going to look like one, and he'll have his moments, and then he'll have his setbacks, which is exactly what we've seen after 2 weeks.
Yeah, let's pump the brakes on the Tom Brady comparison, shall we? Maybe after last night, people will finally stop with that. Because here's the thing. It wasn't even a one-game sample size. It was a one-quarter sample size where he had a really good fourth quarter in his first game. And granted, it was, you know, really clutch and it was a big moment and it was super fun to watch, but still it's one quarter into your NFL career. We do not base people's legacies based on one quarter. Like, no matter how good you are, like, maybe the only person you could point out and say that is like Eli Manning, maybe, because that was one, like, the fact that he keeps beating the Patriots. But still, he was a good quarterback overall. They had to get to the Super Bowl, obviously. But back to J.J. McCarthy, I think it's like an incomplete. You know, in school where it's like, we can't give you a grade yet because it's incomplete. We're sitting at September 15th. He is a young quarterback. He looked the part in that game. Although I will say this, he's had time to sit around and watch at least. So he's not one of those rookie quarterbacks that's just been, you know, thrust into the league and has no idea what's going on. So he should have a leg up on the competition there, but still a very young quarterback with a lot to learn. And we saw that last night.
What about inside that division, Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears?
All right. This is a tough one because, unfortunately, I feel like the haters have some good ammo to work with here because I feel like the talent is there for Caleb Williams. But, like, there is a mental block. I don't know if it's a mental block on the Bears, the fact that that organization has fumbled away a lot of good things, and they have not been great at handling quarterbacks. But, like, the narrative right now is that Caleb Williams does not work with the style of offense that Ben Johnson brings to the table, where Caleb Williams likes to improvise a bit. Ben Johnson has all these great scripted plays. So I don't know if this one is going to work out, but right now, like, the talk feels very loud, and it feels like there's so much pressure on Caleb Williams. So I think a lot of this will be mental for Caleb Williams. Again, I think the talent is there. It's just, can you handle, like, the constant chatter of everybody saying that, like, oh, here we go, the Bears are terrible, especially when you just gave up 50 points. Like, the defense deserves some of the credit for the Bears not being great either. But still, this is a tough narrative to break.
I don't know if he's going to make it as a franchise quarterback. I just don't see it now. Maybe that. I'm not a hot take person, but I don't see it. Like, what have I seen from Caleb Williams to make me think he's going to be a franchise quarterback? Nothing. Like, his mechanics get really bad. He misses some open throws. He makes some really boneheaded mistakes. And if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, look, this is a brand new offensive coordinator. It's a brand new system. He's starting from scratch. He's essentially a rookie again. Okay, fine. But even in, you know, even in big time moments or at times when he should be able to make these easy throws, he's not able to make them. His decision making is questionable. You'll see people break down the film on Caleb Williams, and it really doesn't speak to the fact that maybe he is going to be the guy for Chicago. And I don't necessarily think he's on a short leash, but I just don't see it. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback.
To the Big Apple, what about Mr. Unlimited Russell Wilson?
All right. I mean, so I feel we've got to stop like flipping the narrative here, because like at some point we've got to get off the roller coaster of like, oh, Russell Wilson is terrible. Russell Wilson is amazing. Russell Wilson is back to being terrible. It was so funny watching social media during this game, because after one bad throw, after he had passed for 450 yards and kept his team very much in this game, people were ready to say, oh yeah, Russell Wilson's back to cooked. Like, what do you think is going to happen on moon balls? Like, these are not high percentage throws. Granted, it was not a great decision, but the Giants would not be in that spot if it weren't for Russell Wilson. So I think you need to put away the start dart signs and say, maybe we roll with Russ for a second. I don't know. He's still an NFL quarterback, and it's the easiest argument in the world to say, oh, that guy that hasn't played a single start in the NFL, oh, let's throw him in. We see this all the time when there's a backup quarterback that people want to see. So I think Russell Wilson, I think he's keeping his job for at least a few more games after Sunday.
Yeah, I think he was very good in this game. He was obviously, mm-hmm. He was incredible in this game. So you can't penalize him for making a mistake or two when you put up 37 points. If you're in the National Football League and you put up 37 points, then you should be able to win, in theory, every single game, right? Like, this is more than they would have ever expected out of Russell Wilson. And he's still got talent. Like, this is still a guy who can drive the car, still throws one of the best deep balls in the NFL. Mm. He was awesome yesterday. But it's going to flip back and forth, because this is who Russ is now. He's a veteran, past his prime, who still has it in him from time to time to have a big game. And that's what we saw yesterday.
Yeah, I think so too. Again, it's very easy for people to flip the script, especially when somebody's not especially likable. Then it's very easy for people to take one bad throw and be like, oh, well, he's terrible anyway. Get him out of here. So we'll see how many games Russell Wilson lasts until start dart becomes a thing again. All right, coming up next, we go over the biggest headlines coming out of the NFL yesterday, including, what do the Bengals do now? Joe Burrow might be out for 3 months. What's next in Cincinnati?
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab 3 of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.